Welcome everyone to episode Suffering from Success. My guest today is Raza. Raza studied computer science. He teaches software development and helps startups grow. He also loves learning new things. His hobbies are skincare, cooking, meditation, and working out. Welcome, Raza.
Hello, Anu. Thank you for having me.
So I remember my dad shouting at me while teaching me history at 1 a.m. It was quite traumatizing, but I got A grades. So it's a trade-off, you know. You do well academically, but then you need years of therapy to recover. Mm-hmm. Do you have a core childhood memory of a parent yelling at you while teaching you?
I've got a few memories of my parents yelling at me. I don't know if there's any specific that are to them teaching me. It's more on, hey, why are these results the way they are? Why aren't they this way? Why aren't you like that person or that child or that other student? What do you not want to study and whatnot? You generally, it's the same theme around these. And I found that I lack memories in detail around these events. Maybe it's the trauma, maybe it's just because I don't want to remember them. I don't know, maybe it's because not a lot of them happened. Luckily, my parents weren't that intense. They were intense as, you know, just the average intensity you get with an Asian parent. And it was always, studies were the most important thing. One of my vivid memories that I always remember and that I always come back to is I asked my mom. My mom's a classic Asian mother who does all the things. She cooks, she makes clothes, she does the plumbing, she does everything you can imagine. And I asked her to teach me embroidery. And she was like, no, finish your O-levels first, and then I'll teach you embroidery. And then a few years later, I asked her, can you teach me how to make chapatis? Can you teach me how to make rotis? Because, you know, I want to learn this stuff. I like cooking. Or rather, I just wanted to learn how to cook. I didn't know if I liked cooking as much as I do now. And I had the same response. Finish your A-levels, and then I'll teach you how to cook. Do these other things first. And effectively what I was being told anytime I wanted to branch out or anytime I wanted to do something else was studies are what matter most. And your purpose for existing was to study and to do well in school and academically.
All right. I can definitely relate. I think that my parents as well put such a big focus on academics and achieving. And I wonder if success in academics often, does it translate to success in the real world? What do you think?
I think these days less and less so. In the past, this may have been a really good, great correlation. Whereas the better you do academically, the better you do in work, in your work life, in your profession. But these days, the gap has been so big that it doesn't actually make sense to focus on academics, in my opinion. For most studies, for most fields these days, it's better to actually learn by doing the thing instead of learning by reading books. Books are great as reference, they're great as points to start off of, but once you've actually gotten started, it's just way better to do things on your own, figure out how you learn best and do it that way instead of focusing so much on studies. This is something that I've been trying to get my younger siblings, I have two younger sisters, I've been trying to get them to move away from academics as intently as my parents had me going. I offered my younger sister that, hey, I'll pay the exact same, I'll pay your costs for uni, but I'll give them to you instead. Whereas I don't want you to go to uni, I just want you to try something on your own, like build a business, just launch a side project. It doesn't even have to make money. Like, just try to do something on your own instead of just going to business school and learning business. I don't even know if that's possible anymore. Yeah, these days academics are different from where they were 20, 30 years ago. And yeah, I don't think it correlates as much. And I don't think parents should be putting as much importance or as much emphasis on studying these days.
Yep, I completely agree. And I think that also if there was, like when we were growing up, if there was a little more of an environment created where you can try new things, learn new mm-hmm. things and fail, I think that we would definitely have benefited from that. Because as an adult, I became so scared of failing. Mm-hmm. So when I, you know, failed the first time, I failed the second time, I was completely out of my depth. I was like, okay, this isn't working out. What do I do now? So that was really hard.
Great point. I just want to jump in here and mention that learning to fail is a skill that you have to actually build. It's not something, if you're an Asian kid, if you're grieving in a typical Asian asshole, a failure is really scary. It's the worst thing ever. And unlearning that and learning that, hey, you can actually fail and failing is productive and that's how you grow, it's a hard thing to learn. And I think logically, it's easier to learn than emotionally, where the emotional scars take a longer time to uncover. And even now, in work, in my personal life, wherever, I still have this fear of failure, which kind of rules my life, and it's really, really, really sucks. But yeah, over time, I'm slowly working to overcome it. And yeah, if you're listening, whoever you are, and you think, hey, I'm afraid of failure, and I don't really, you don't have a, you're not sure about your relationship to failure, my recommendation is just to look into why that is so and how you can change that.
That's really insightful. Thank you for that. How do you define success?
Oof, that's a big question, right? I think success is completely subjective. It differs from person to person. What I consider success might be completely different to what others did. And my definition of success has changed over the last couple of years even. I couldn't have imagined doing what I'm doing now and calling myself successful even 3 years ago, or even 2 years ago. For me, it's important, I think, for anyone really to figure out what it is that you want out of life. Be that something that you've been taught as a child, something that you adopted from society, from your culture, from just your personal beliefs, whatever it is, figure out what it is that matters to you and figure out if that's something that you want to matter to you. Because oftentimes, as I mentioned, we can inherit these beliefs from our parents, from our cultures that aren't actually accurate. We're only reflecting what other people are doing. Okay, if that person is doing this thing and they're saying that makes them happy, maybe that'll also make me happy. I think finding what makes you happy and finding what you consider success is an entire task in its own. Once you've done that, and this is it's an ongoing process and it's something that can often change, figure out how you can achieve that. For me, these days, happiness is creating. It's making things. It's helping other people make things. That's why I do what I do. I teach. I work with startups whenever I can. I like to help people grow. And yeah, for me, health, my mental health, my physical health, my relationships, having good friendships, maintaining my family connections, that really is as much as success as I can. All I care about. Money, academic success, you know, career-wise, all of the fancy titles. I don't really care too much for it. I'm more interested in actually trying to undo the harm that I did over the last couple of years with my family, actually maintaining my familial relationships. That's way more important to me. And yeah, success is just mental health, physical health, and emotional health.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think that success and happiness go hand in hand. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. But often in our culture, when we are following a recipe for success, it's easy to lose sight of why we're taking certain steps. I definitely feel that when we are following a certain, like what our parents told us to study or to do, mm-hmm. we don't explore what we enjoy because, you know, often our parents will say, do a career that is practical and lucrative, because it'll be like your hopes and dreams aren't going to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a part of Asian culture, South Asian culture that's just built in, and it's been this way for decades. Where they look at statistically what makes money, they're very logically minded. Where our parents will tell you, okay, this degree, this course, this career makes money. If you do something else, you're not going to make money. And partially, it sits in truth, right? It stems from a lot of truth. Where if you're a doctor, you're making a lot of money, and money is correlated to success and happiness. Therefore, you know, we want you to be successful and happy. So if you go to become a doctor, if you become a lawyer, you're going to be happy. It doesn't often pan out that way, and our cultures, they're inherently risk averse, where we've come from a time of just trying to survive, not trying to thrive, not trying to grow. So survival is the emotion that everything is built off of, as far as I've seen and as far as I've experienced, where to survive, to not be poor, to not, you know, go into poverty and whatnot, that all that is associated with failure, and it's associated with not having money. So the opposite of that is what's emphasized. And if you do anything that strays you from that path, yeah, pretty quickly you're going to be put down.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that Erin mentioned in the first episode, and I think mm-hmm. you have also touched on previously, is that we often find that we have a certain rules and certain things that we have to, like, for example, in South Asian culture, there's two career options, become a doctor or become an engineer. And then they want you to get married, buy a house. What happens after that? What happens next, right? So what happens after you achieve all these goals? And are people around the world, you think, facing a quarter-life crisis?
Oof, I definitely think so. As far as South Asian cultures are concerned, I think that's a big thing. Whereas you end up having a meaning crisis where you're told these things, where you do this you do X, Y, and Z, you get a house, you get married, you get a job that pays well, and that's it, you're successful, that's it, your life is lived. And you get a taste of that in any shape, way, or form. Maybe you've got a good job that pays well, maybe you've found the love of your life, maybe you're just married, not even the love of your life. Maybe you just got a good house that's a good rental prices, and what happens next? You're like, wait, is this it? Is this all it's supposed to be? And you can extrapolate from where you are and see all of the things that your parents told you would make you successful. And you can see, okay, wait, they told me all these things. And as far as I can see, yeah, it's not working out. I think it's a mix of both Western culture and the way Western societies are structured, where everything is so isolated. You're not only are you not living with your parents anymore, which is, it has its ups and downs, and I'm not going to get into that in this conversation, but you're completely isolated from family, from cultural values, and the things that are told that will make us happy are easier and easier to achieve these days. The world is getting richer and richer. Societal wealth is increasing. So at the end, there's nothing there. Once you've reached those points, what do you do next? And as far as meaning is concerned, it seems kind of pointless. Like, what do I do now? And it's a classic mistake of setting your goals and setting your objectives to be very, very literal and not an ending. There's an end point to it. And if there's an end point to your goals and dreams, you have no reason to go on once you reach those, if that's what you've been brought up with.
Right. That's a really interesting point. I think that it's, we often on our mission to achieve these goals, we might lose sight of other things that are actually important, like, for example, our mental and physical health, mm-hmm. or connecting with others, which I think is really important. Like, connecting with other people gives me a lot of joy, fulfillment, and purpose. What do you think you have incorporated into your life, or what do you think people can incorporate to have a more purpose-driven life?
I think for me, one of the most important parts of this entire process has been just listening to your emotions. We're bombarded these days with things that keep our attention occupied. Everyone's aware. If you're listening to this podcast, you're obviously aware of how intensely we bombard ourselves with stimulation. Social media, movies, TV, music, everywhere we go, we have something to keep our thoughts and our heads occupied. And as a result, what usually ends up happening is we lose track of what's actually going on inside us. Like, what are our thoughts that are our own? What are the thoughts that what are our feelings that are actually our own, that are not inherited from society and from all the media we're consuming? For me, the biggest part of my life has been just trying to reconnect there. Internally looking, okay, what do I actually feel about this? What is my feeling of this thing? What is not something that I've inherited and picked up from all this media that I consume and all these people that tell me to think what I should think? What do I actually feel about this? How do I feel about this? And where do I go from here? And when you do this, you'll end up finding that you actually have the answers. The answers that you're looking for in all these podcasts and all these books and all these sessions of coaching and therapy and whatnot. Oftentimes, you have the answers inside you. You just need to actually listen. And listening is, in these days, it's quite difficult because you need to sit down. Maybe you're a person that likes journaling. Maybe you're a person that likes meditation. Maybe you're a person that likes therapy. Yeah, all of those could work. Maybe you just want to talk to your friends, right? Whatever it is, find what works for you. I love therapy. I love meditation, and I love journaling. I'm a big fan of therapy as well, but yeah, it has its times. So yeah, just sit down with a journal, trying to get your thoughts out of your head and onto a piece of paper, and yeah, just do some stream of consciousness journaling and figure out what it is that you're feeling and what it is that you find meaning in. And when you're starting out, I want to be very clear here. It might not be very obvious what it is you find meaning in. You might feel like, I think this is what I find meaning in. And then you try it and turns out, no, that was a completely different emotion. That's normal. You might have to stumble your way around a little bit while you're listening to yourself, because you haven't been listening to yourself for so long. You've forgotten what that actually feels like and how it actually works. Just listen to yourself internally. Figure out what it is that you find meaning in. Try it out. Do some trial and error. And sooner or later, you're going to find something that actually feels meaningful and that gives you, you know, purpose.
That's true. I think it takes a while, especially when we've been conditioned to listen to what other people say, like whether it's our parents or whether it's extended family or uncles and aunties. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. I mean, I remember when I was growing up in India, one of my family friends, an uncle, gave me, I think the piece of advice that I find quite hilarious up until now, because he suggested that I do a course in blockchain management from Estonia. Mm-hmm. Well, I had no background, not just that I didn't have a background, but for me, being raised in India, it was a little random to go to Estonia. So I think that everybody has their own ideas of what you should do. And often we have to drown out those voices and listen to our heart and play around with things until we find what gives us meaning and purpose.
Yeah, that's really funny. And reminds me of another event that happens in my life, which is I graduated 2.5 years ago, let's say 3 years ago. My dad still sends me links to scholarships that are happening in Estonia, in Germany. Hey man, there's a scholarship. It's fully paid. You should take it.
Yeah.
Bro, what do you mean? I graduated 3 years ago. I don't want to do another bachelor's. But these are things that they grew up with that were, at their time, in their knowledge, the best things you could do to achieve a happy and successful life. And what I've learned is that this is their way of saying, I love you. I love you, I care for you, I want the best for you. This is them saying it. They didn't, maybe they're not using the exact words, but these acts, when they send you these things, effectively what they're saying is, hey, I am thinking of you, I love you, I appreciate you, I value you, I want you to be successful, I take this course, and then you'll be happy.
Yep.
Yeah, that's how it works for them.
That's a really positive way of looking at it, I think. And I also, I would definitely say that because I don't want this to be, I want to definitely touch on how in South Asian culture there is an emphasis on learning and growing as well, which I think I've taken into my adult life.
Mm-hmm.
I love reading, and I know you have mentioned that you also love reading.
Yeah, wish I read as much as I want to. But.
Yes, where is the time, right? And focus as well. But yeah, I definitely learned a lot from reading Atomic Habits. Mm-hmm. That's the last book I read.
Nice.
And
it's a banger.
It is really good. And I think my main takeaway was the concept of designing systems that you put in place as being more important than the goals you want to achieve.
Yep.
I have had fluid goals when it comes to productivity over the past few months, but I did put in a strict morning routine. And I know you're dying to ask me what my morning routine is, so go ahead. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes, please do tell us.
What are the top 3 books you have read over the past year that you would recommend to our audience?
It's a tough question. I think the first one I'd recommend is Introspect by Visakha and Virasamy. He's an Singaporean-American author. And the book is effectively about introspection and looking at your goals, or rather your beliefs about yourself. Looking at the goals that you've set, all the beliefs, the thoughts, the emotions that you have, and just introspecting them and looking inwards. In web development, you have this thing called inspect element, where you're able to look at the source code of a website. Like, how does this thing actually work? If I were to use a more familiar analogy, it would be like lifting the hood of a car and figuring out, hey, how does this engine actually work? Looking at the internals of a car. That's effectively what the book lets you do to yourself. It lets you introspect and look inwards. How do you work? What are your thoughts? Where do these thoughts come from? What are your beliefs? Where are these beliefs based on? And it helps you unravel this, all these knots that you have inside yourself, and these voids of understanding and misunderstanding. And you're able to just work through a lot of trauma, and you're able to work through a lot of things that make you sad and make you happy. And it helps you understand yourself as a person better. And yeah, that was one of the best books I've read in recent history. And I'm probably going to read it over again. I'm in my through my second read right now. It's an incredible book. Highly recommend it. The second one I'd have to go with is The Pathless Path. It's a book from a ex-McKinsey consultant, a classic corporate life, who quit his job and he moved to South Asia, where he lived a very frugal life. And he went from making a lot of money to making almost no money. And he found that not having a path in your life, the path that we usually in our South Asian cultures are so explicitly told to follow, is beneficial. It's good for you. Taking time off from work and not having your identity and not having your purpose for existing be assigned to work, it's really good. Turns out if you make your entire identity and your purpose for existing work, that's all you'll do, and that might not make you happy. So that's really good. It's a really good book, and I highly recommend it. It's not for everyone. Some people might find it off-putting, but I found it very valuable. Even though the author completely very disconnected from South Asian cultures, I don't think he'd realize how much it impacted and how much it connects to the South Asian audience. And what I've really learned from that book is that the purpose of life can often just be to find meaningful work. The work you want to do in your life is just the work of finding meaningful work. Like, what is it that finds you meaning? What is it that feels worth doing? That in and of itself can be work. That's my second pick. I'm struggling to think of a third one. But yeah, I've been rereading Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. I try to read it once a year. I'm on my third read. It's an incredible book. If you've not read it, Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, incredible book. Not really much of a book, more of a journal. So if you like gossip, you can look at what he was gossiping to himself about. I don't think he would appreciate me describing his thoughts as gossip, but it's an incredible book. You can get it for free. You can read it at our library. You can, I highly recommend it.
Cool. That's really interesting because I also find that meditation and journaling and therapy, all three of them, it's sort of a multi-pronged approach that I took towards my mental health over the past few years. And it has, I can't talk enough about it. But whenever I try to talk to my parents about my low mood, my dad says, just be happy. Mm-hmm. I never thought of that. I'm cured.
Whoa, that just worked.
Yes, absolutely. So it's really hard to talk to them about things like depression and anxiety. How do you feel about our generation being a lot more open to therapy?
I'm mostly positive about it. I think net therapy is a net positive. I do think there is a space, there's a time in where it can be too much, where people can start taking therapy when they just need to spend some time with themselves. They don't actually need the therapy. They just need to spend some time away from their screens, away from all of this bombardment of stimulation. And for the most part, I think therapy is good. I think it's a net positive in the world. I think it helps you understand yourself. It helps you understand society. It helps you just structure your way of thinking into a logical and sane way. For the most part, I agree. I think it's good. It's a good thing.
Definitely. I completely agree. I think that the takeaways and the things that I, the main things that's really helped me is cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. And I use that whenever I am feeling like any sort of negative emotions. And I just sort of, I'm able to do it on my laptop, on Excel. Nice. I'm such a nerd, but it always helps.
Whoa, where's the spreadsheet for that?
Exactly.
I think one last thing I'll leave here is therapy is just education. It's education on the self. It's education on sometimes a bit how our brain works, specifically how your exact brain works for you. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. And if you've taken therapy and you've tried a therapist and you haven't found a good fit, try another one. Try some alternative forms of therapy. We can try some courses online, maybe not even a course, maybe just a quick blog post that works you through, helps you through working through a single emotion or a single specific arrangement or environment. It's highly educative, and if you haven't had a fit yet, just try again.
Absolutely. How would you explain depression or anxiety to the boomer generation?
Oof, that's a tough one. This is more of an opinion of mine, where their problems were so different from ours, and they were so much more intense than ours, that they were by default living on flight mode. It was in the fight or flight responses. They were almost always either in fight mode or in flight mode. And when you're in that state of being, your brain doesn't have space for depression. It doesn't have space for these things. And conceptually, these things don't make sense to them. It's like telling a chicken that, hey, you used to be an egg. That's a terrible analogy. I don't know why that makes sense, but it's like trying to explain color to a person that can only see black and white. How do you explain what color is when your entire existence has only been black and white? And this is an analogy that really worked for me, is because a couple of years ago when I was so emotionally numb, I was operating completely off of my head, that I didn't listen to my heart, I didn't listen to my emotions. And when I started actually going to therapy and started building that emotional availability, I realized, wow, I've been living life in black and white. And explaining this to them, it's quite, it's a challenge. And I think it differs from person to person and parent to parent. It's different for your mom than your dad. But the easiest thing that I found, the easiest way that I've experienced and the way that I found that works best is just explaining to them, hey, the same way you can have a cancer in a certain part of your body that physically differs, that physically impacts you, in that same manner, you can have a difference in chemicals in your brain. It's a physical thing. Where you make it physical, I think, is much better than having it abstract, where it's I'm feeling sad because of X, Y, and Z. If you just explain to them, hey, similar to how you can have bowel movements that don't sit right with you sometimes when you've had too much chai, I'm having issues with my head, whereas I haven't had chai, and now the chemicals in my brain are all messed up. And framing it that way often helps for me.
That's really, that is very insightful. I know that whenever my parents, if I want to, my parents or uncles and aunties or anyone of the boomer generation mentions that, you know, they didn't go to therapy in their time, mm-hmm. I really have to fight the urge to say yes, and it shows.
Oh, man. Yeah, that'll be coming up in your therapy session if you do that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think another thing that I really have to fight the urge of is whenever in the group chat, whenever any of my uncles, aunties, or extended family are talking about me getting married, I have to be like, oh, how's your marriage going?
Oh, no. But yeah. That's not a can of worms I want to open.
No, I definitely don't want to be caught in that, and because I'll just open Pandora's box, and then that'll also get me into a lot of trouble. So.
Yeah, there's a sense of grace that you have to approach these things with, and I'm growing to appreciate some of these things as I grow older, that it's not black and white as we think. These are certain environments and certain things that are just, they had to happen. These are stages that you have to go through for a society, for a civilization to progress.
Absolutely. Would you like to share anything that you've learned about yourself or how you relate to the world through your meditation, journaling, or therapy?
There's a bunch I can share here. Question is, which one of these am I open to sharing to the world? I think I'll start, the one I'll pick on is finding alignment. So there's, I've previously touched on this already in our conversation around meaning, and finding meaning in our society and in our culture, whereas our problems are not off finding enough food or having shelter or any of the material positions that our parents or our grandparents had. Our struggle, our great war is a war of meaning. Our great depression is one of purpose. And the thing that I've found that works for me is something that, I've already covered, which is just listening on a day-to-day basis. What is it that makes me happy? And what it is that makes me feel good, that creates value for the world, that is a positive response to the world in this time and in this day. And meditation and journaling, specifically stream of consciousness journaling, has helped a lot, where I'm able to stop and get all these thoughts out of my head, put them on paper, and then sometimes I can disagree with what I've written. I'll write something that I've taken out of my head and be like, why? I don't actually agree with this. How did I think of this? Like, I wrote this 60 seconds ago, but I don't agree with it. And it helps a lot when you can find these things as they're happening. And then turns out, cool, you don't agree with this thing? All right, what feels good now? And then from there, it's a matter of a trial and error and finding what feels good. I am currently signing up for dance lessons and yoga lessons and improv lessons next month at the same time, because I don't know which of these is going to work for me. I don't know which of these I'm going to enjoy and want to continue over and over again. So I'm just going to try all of them and see which of these fits, and I'll go from there. So it can be a big thing to have just patience with yourself. It's important to have patience with yourself and your being, and forgive yourself for not understanding. This is one of my favorite meditations, where you just sit and you tell yourself, I forgive myself for not understanding. And you just repeat that over and over again. I forgive myself for not understanding. And that's it. Just forgive yourself. Be nice. Be kind to yourself.
That is really beautiful. I think that's one thing that I definitely want our viewers, our audience to take away. Mm-hmm. I forgive myself for not understanding. Mm-hmm. And I think that you will, I think that you will enjoy dance, yoga very much, and improv as well.
Let's go.
And let's see which one you end up really taking a liking to and sticking with. And also another thing I really like that you shared is that our great depression is one of purpose. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really something that I want to delve into myself later on. And thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me and all these wonderful questions.
Thank you so much.